Hey everybody, it's Sunny. If you're listening to this, that means you are listening to the iTunes feed, and you don't want to listen to the iTunes feed because we're talking about a movie we talked about weeks ago. We're talking about Wrath of Man, and that movie came out years ago. You should have listened to it late 2 weeks ago. Anyway, you will be able to listen to this because we did do a bonus episode this week. We did a bonus episode on we did a Guy Ritchie draft, fun episode. I think Vic may have actually won that draft. First Vic win. Ever in anything, at least on the Subbeacon. So anyway, go listen, listen to this episode. Go sign up at the Patreon at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. There's lots of good stuff there. If you just listen to this feed, you'll have missed our Top Gun episode. You'll probably miss our Jurassic World episode. I don't know if I'm going to put that up. We'll see. So anyway, go sign up, subbeacon.com. Patreon, it's as little as a dollar a month, keeps Vic in champagne and cigars and whatnot. Maybe he can buy a second fridge to store all his bodies in. All right, bye.
You were in an accident.
My son.
He didn't make it.
I need to know who killed my son.
When I was just a baby.
The tree has been shook, and it's been shook hard.
We've scorched earth.
Be a good boy.
You started by saying you'd do anything. What I'm hearing is you think you've done everything.
Don't ever play with
God. I can see it's going to be a long night.
It's got to be an inside job. I can do it in 2 weeks. The one I wish you could do in 20 years.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
The countdown is on. This is the penultimate show that I will tape from the wilds of Virginia.
Wow.
And there's like an echo because none of the rooms in my
there
house
won't be any echo
anymore.
There won't be any echo by the time people are listening to this and I get done with my audition magic.
It's amazing how houses do that in a house, but we know when it's empty like that, it just sounds so, you know.
I have to take apart a trampoline, which nearly killed me to put together. And now I have to take it all apart.
You should just leave it.
I can't do that.
You should just leave it. Just leave it and buy a new one.
Not possible.
It's
because
so
it was
taut.
A gift from Santa.
It's so taut, and it's like
Santa brought it for the kids, and so
I guess that's true. You don't want to disappoint Santa.
I mean, and how could it be replaced then? Right, it wouldn't have the North Pole magic.
I mean, look, here's the thing. I understand that there's lots of good. What you should do is just tell them that you're bringing it, and then when they get to the new house, it's there already. And you're like, hey, it beat us here. How
and
about
the
that?
People who move in get the free trampoline.
Everybody wants a free trampoline.
A win-win.
Yeah. So I'm going to do
trampoline.
That.
Trampoline.
And just a lot of one thing the movers won't do is bring things down from the attic. And so all the stuff I have stored in our two attics, because we have two attics, has to be brought down from the attics. That's going to be fun.
They won't bring it down because they're worried about like stepping through the ceiling or...
I don't know why, but none of the movers we spoke with would go into attics.
Is this they pull down the string and the ladder comes out attic?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So. Attics are the worst. So I find it hard to blame them.
And you sometimes will have, I think this was the case certainly in our old house, and I think in our house upstairs, I don't go to the attic, but the nails are just naked. They're right sticking out there. You know, they're sticking out the nails.
The attic is totally finished. It's like a room.
Ours is like a room.
It's like the biggest closet in the world.
Wow.
That happens to be right over top of the garage. Yeah, it's amazing.
No. Ours is unfinished, so it's insulation, it's nails, it's everything.
That all begins on May 17. No, sorry, June 17. Mm-hmm. The great...
Yeah, I was like... Has it already happened? Great
adventure. And our stuff, we then get to Jersey, I think, on the 20th, and our stuff arrives on the 21st.
So. Do you leave the fridge behind and inherit the new fridge?
Well, we leave the fridge in the kitchen behind, our garage refrigerator.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Because with four kids, you need a second the fridge. Extra. You can't keep everything that you need in one fridge.
I can barely do it with two kids.
Yeah, that's coming with us. So that one is coming with us, and we will have a garage fridge in New Jersey as well.
It's always interesting to see how different regions do this, because in Texas, so when we moved from Virginia, we replaced all of the kitchen equipment to put in like new stainless steel stuff, you know, for
sure.
To make it pop. We wanted to pop. Got pop. And we left the washer and the dryer just because, you know, whatever, because that's what you do in Virginia. You leave washers and dryers, I guess. And you leave everything else. But in Texas, all of the fridge and freezer and everything, that was still here, but they had taken the washer and dryer. Washer and dryer were gone.
Yeah.
And apparently this is how it is in Dallas, in Texas. You take your washer and dryer with you when you go somewhere new. Like, okay, fair enough.
That seems like a lot of work. Those things are heavy. And also, those things are typically bought for the space they're in.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a weird thing to take because depending on the configuration of your laundry area, you might have an over-under. You might have constraints on how large the machine could be, because these are not all... It's not like a range where, you know, your stove is basically a single standard, right? If there is a drop-in stove that, you know, with an oven and a range,
those things are one size. No, that's not true at all. We, like, there are all different widths.
Well, they're different actual widths.
Yeah.
But they vary by, like, you know, 1/64 of an inch.
Yeah.
You know, they're very, very close, whereas there's a huge difference in size that you can get from washers. Anyway, ridiculous.
I don't know. It's weird. We had to go out and buy new washers and dryers.
In Oklahoma, when they move, they put everything in a rickety old flatbed truck. When they head out to California, they put in the stove, the sink, everything.
Black gold.
Black gold. They're heading out
there. Rocking chairs on the top.
The Okies are heading out.
So anyway, enough moving talk. How are you, gentlemen? Yeah. Sunny, all right?
Sunny, what's going on?
I'm great.
That good?
I took the kids to the pool today to get like 90 minutes worth of pool energy out of them, which was, I think, pretty effective at making them tired. But it also got 90 minutes of pool energy out of me.
Yes.
So I'm pretty tired.
We've talked about this before.
I know
there is nothing
you
hate more than the community pool. I like the pool down at the beach.
No,
because the beach is small and there are not 100 kids running around. They're not like teenage lifeguards drunk on power, blowing their whistles. Don't hang on the buoys. Don't get off the line.
The teenagers have old voices. That's interesting.
Yeah, kids, get off here. No, I mean, it's not a community pool. It's like we have a membership.
The HOA, right? It's the HOA pool.
It's not an HOA.
Is
it's like a
Knights?
Private club.
Whatever it is.
It's the Knights, the Knights of Columbus. Yeah.
Whatever it is.
I mean, anyway, we went there today and there were 12 people there in the
entire
pool.
It's way too many.
And the pool's enormous.
Way too many.
So, I mean, I wasn't too worried about it. I mean, on the weekends, it's a zoo, but.
You have other people's children coming over. I want to play with Johnny.
God, there was a fucking kid today.
No. I am not your parent. Your parent is charged with entertaining you and supervising you in a death trap of swimming pool. Me. You are not I am not your responsibility.
I empathize. Okay. I empathize with this because today there was a, my daughter's
of swimming pools.
My daughter is always making friends with people. I don't know how, I don't know where she gets that.
Oh, I do.
Bullshit from.
It's from Beth.
Well, I mean, obviously, but she made a new friend and like they would go down the big slide and then they would run around and go down the big slide. And every time this kid came down the slide, she had to she grabbed onto my arm and was like, I need help. Because she couldn't swim. She could not swim. I would get her on my arm and I would like swing her toward the side. And it makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm like,
handling
I'm in a pool.
Kid.
I'm like touching somebody else's kid. I don't want to do like That's how I wind up in Oz, speaking of Oz. I was like, I don't want any of that.
Sweetheart, can you swim? Let me help you over.
But she
swim.
Eventually she got out of the pool and came back with the arm flotation things on. But this was after 30 minutes of her not being able to swim. And her parents are just sitting there at the table looking at their phones.
Yeah. Yeah, looking
at their phones.
You know why? Because you go to a pool and half the parents there view it as free childcare. There is some other sucker out there who's a good parent who will be in the water with their child, and I'll just let my kid run around and make friends with their child, and then that sucker will parent my kid for me.
Yeah.
You know what?
So,
no thank you.
Pass. This is why six children have drowned around Mr. Jonathan B. Last.
Mysterious.
I need help. Well, you should have thought about that before you got in the pool.
You should ask your parents to help you then, shouldn't you?
You should go see somebody about getting swimming lessons. I did that for my kids. Why didn't you get that for yours? Anyway, but the pool was fine. The pool was fine. I don't know, man. I'm just tired. I'm tired.
Yeah. Are you solo parenting this week?
Yeah, I'm. Remember, I got all the physical media.
Yeah.
Physical media. So going through that.
Have you watched any of the stuff?
I got like three more discs yesterday.
Ooh.
It's crazy.
The Big Lebowski on 4K. Mm. Last Night in Soho on 4K.
Really?
And
that's a movie we didn't do.
And Starship Troopers. Troopers on 4K.
Michael,
we're going to do a Starship.
Because
we're doing a Starship Troopers episode at some point, aren't we? Isn't it the 25th anniversary?
Dina Powell.
Dina Powell.
Dina Powell is a former assistant.
It's a Dina.
Dina something. Dina Meyer. Dina Meyer. Sorry.
Dina Meyer, yeah. Yeah, they came out in 97. I mean, it has to be about 25 years this month. Hold on, I'm going to effort this while we talk. Last night I watched Wrath of Man, which we're talking about momentarily here, and also I actually watched Videodrome, which I owned before because I'm going to be writing about David Cronenberg this week. So,
it
came out November of 97.
It's a body horror.
So anyway, I'm good. There was that crazy Disney story I wanted to talk about, the Disney wedding.
Yes, Sonny.
Are we going to talk about that?
Yeah, let's do that right now. What happened? Tell our listeners who haven't been following this, explain what happened. And was it on Twitter? Did she air this out on Twitter, on Reddit?
It was on Reddit. Somebody put there's a forum on Reddit called Am I the Asshole? AIT.
Oh, that one.
Am I the Asshole? And in this subreddit, people tell ridiculous stories about how they're terrible and ask the internet to judge them for being terrible. I mean, that's not technically asking.
Reddit really is the best place on the internet.
it's right up there with 4chan. The short version of this story is a couple was getting married at Disney World, and one of the parents had given them some amount of money to pay for various things at the wedding. And instead of using the money, or other money to provide food for the guests, instead of, catering and, having a dinner and drinks or whatever, they instead spent at the cost of $2,750 per 30 minutes, they spent that money on having Mickey and Minnie there because these are sick, twisted Disney adults.
How many hours were they there for?
I don't know.
I think the nub of this was that they chose two separate appearances by Mickey and Minnie over alcohol.
Paying for food. Mm-hmm.
No, I think food, but no.
No, there
alcohol.
Was no food.
Oh,
no,
no,
so
food.
In the I Am I the Asshole post, they said, we told people
the
when
Bear
they
Jamboree
came,
restaurant has chicken fingers.
We
Go
told
there.
People when they came,
it's amazing
selections. We're in Disney World, so there are lots of restaurants and vending machines. If you get hungry, the vending machines, that's where they're sending their wedding guests.
Get the turkey legs.
paid money.
That's not, you know, that's like at Red Fair. I don't think you have to go to Gaston's.
Oh, they have those.
Yeah, they have
those.
They have
they've got the big. They've got the big turkey legs at Disney. Don't worry. So anyway, so
the guests should
just
have gotten those and thrown them at the bride.
I just tweeted out. You know, I took a screenshot of this. I tweeted out. I was like, Disney adults are so weird. Disney people are so weird. Quote unquote, Disney people are so weird. Because they are. That's a weird, like, the whole story is weird. But, like, the idea that you are prioritizing having people in a Mickey and Minnie costume come there to dance with you or whatever they do to, like, watch you have sex. I don't know what you do, what they do. But like, there's
a
secondary
question. That's more than $27.50 and a half per 30 minutes.
There's a secondary question here, because there were two basic responses. 90% of people were like, yes, these people are insane. 90% of folks were like, yeah, these people are nuts. Mm-hmm. Put them in prison forever. Get them away from society. Then 10% of the people were like, how dare you judge these people? It's their wedding day. They should be able to do whatever they want and not be judged for it. And we, who are we to say people are ridiculous and blah, blah, blah. And it's that 10% that I'm interested in, because it's a fundamentally, I think, incorrect way of looking at what a wedding is. A wedding is not about you.
Yes.
The wedding is not about you. The wedding is not a celebration of you, unless you're an enormous narcissist, which obviously any grown-up Disney adult is, because they're sick.
You don't need the Disney in there. That describes 98% of the entire population.
There's something especially weird about these. But anyway, it depends on how you look at what a wedding is. Is a wedding a celebration of you, a narcissistic tribute to yourself that you want everybody to come and tell you how great you are? Or is it like a party that you're throwing for everybody else to get everybody together and celebrate life and whatever?
Yeah,
and
or, you know, a sacrament.
I don't know what...
Well, what do they say?
A bond between a couple and a community to further life and perpetuate society. I mean,
write,
who can say?
You can write your own
vows. That's not what the Unitarian guy said when he was doing my vows.
What do they tell you? They say a wedding is one day, but marriage is a lifetime. Not they tell you that, so it's just one day. But, Sonny, you're right that... As much as it's a special day for you and everybody has come there to see you and your bride, when you look out at that sea of people, you also have to remember these people traveled possibly a very long way. Maybe they even bought plane tickets. Maybe they're spending at a hotel that's expensive. And what can you do for them since they made it all the way here? And the answer is Mickey and Minnie.
They didn't have to come.
There's that. You can say that.
You don't have to go to a wedding. A wedding is not a force majeure where, you know, well, I got the invitation, now I have to go.
No,
you know, anybody can do what they want.
Oh, that's not true. True. There is a gun to your head obligation
depending
to go to a
on
wedding.
Whom.
I mean, I like, if you know the people better than in passing.
Oh, you got, oh.
No. 100% no.
Wow. Incorrect.
You send a present. If all you do is know them slightly better than in passing, then it is better for you to politely decline the invitation and just send a gift, because then they get a gift and they don't spend the money on your your dinner and drinks. So that's the kindest thing you can do for some people. I think, honestly, you should not go to a wedding unless you are deeply emotionally invested in the couple. Otherwise, you are just a leech sucking off of their hospitality. You're basically like the wedding crashers. So I think part of this is to not go to weddings.
If you have a success rate like they do, I'd go to every wedding.
You do go to every wedding. Have you ever turned down a wedding invitation from mine?
Yes. I'd say that's true. It was the same day as my friend Todd Palladino's. But I feel like the older I get, the more I have had to turn down. And sometimes I am very genuinely surprised at wedding invitations that I do receive. It used to be the reverse. Like, I can't believe I'm not, am I invited to so-and-so's wedding? But now it's like, really? I didn't really think I knew the person that well. And there's the invitation.
Because there are a lot of invitations that are only sent out of politeness, because the person feels like, for instance, within a workplace, right? If a person is, you know, a small workplace, somebody is close friends with like half the people there.
Oh, that's a hard
one. And then they're like, okay, well, I don't invite my friends, but then I have to, like, I can't leave people out. So I'm going to invite my manager too, even though I don't really want Steve to come to this thing. And what Steve should do when he is invited to Jaden's wedding, like, you know, his junior employee, is he should be genuinely touched by the invitation, and he should send Jaden a lovely gift, and he should not attend, so that Jaden's parents can spend that money on people who are actually dear to them.
Well, so here's a let me put another scenario in here. So when I got married, I was not still at the Weekly Standard, but I invited a bunch of people from the Weekly Standard. I invited some people who I might not otherwise have, but I did not invite like Bill and Careful. Fred.
Oh, okay.
I did not invite Bill and Fred because I felt like if I was inviting them, I'm basically like asking them for a gift. I'm saying like, we're not super close.
Because Vic and I each had a person from the Weekly Standard, the same person, I believe, who was not invited. One person.
I'm furrowing my brow. There was no video, so I'm trying to think.
Was it Lev?
Mm. No, that would have been interesting.
And that's why Lev
killed
you both.
I'll have to ask you out the show who it was. But anyway.
The point is, don't go to people's weddings. And the
that
Disney,
is a very JVL thing to do.
Unless you love them.
I like to go to a wedding because it's a party when I was younger and drinking and partying and meet some girls.
When you're 20, I feel like there's a difference when you're 23 and when you're, you know,
I say that's completely right, but I think JVL has felt that all his life.
I was at a wedding 2 weeks ago, and it was amazing. I cried like a baby all through the ceremony.
Who cries at weddings?
I cry at every wedding I go to. Because I only go to the weddings of people who mean something to me.
Oh, my God.
And it's beautiful, and I get really worked up, and this was great. And this couple is going to be, they are going to spend the next 70 years together in bliss. And I'm so happy for them. And so that's why you should go. But the point is, the Disney stuff. I went and did some looking about Disney. And would you care to guess some of the ceremony venue fees for Disney World?
Oh, this sounds like a fun game. Yes, I would like to. I would guess, all right, so like, well, let me ask, is Cinderella's Castle an option?
So it is. The cheapest you can get are $3,500 as just the venue fee. That's before you put food and bev, which is food and bev is a minimum of $210 per person.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum. It goes up from there.
Oh, my God.
Floral, they don't give prices online. You got to learn more. The decor, they don't give prices online. And then you add like photography, entertainment, stuff starts getting nuts. But the minimum places are places that I've never even heard of. Conch Key Marina, Crescent Cove, the Marina, Patio, and Terrace, which just look like places in the Grand Floridian, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that in the resorts. Village? It must be somewhere in the village.
Now, you can get onto one of the worlds in that would be Epcot. Nice. So you can do an Epcot wedding for $5,500. So you could do China or Germany or Italy or Morocco or Japan, all of which have seemed very nice. When you go up to the $5,000, there's like the Wedding Gazebo and the Seabreeze Point. I have no idea where these places are. The Disney Wedding Pavilion looks to be $6,000, and then things start getting a little nuts. You can get married at the Tower of Terror for $7,500.
Wait, what is that?
Oh, it's a ride in Hollywood Studios.
Wait a minute.
For the same amount of money, you could do
that. You're getting married at a ride?
Yeah, that's right. For the same amount of money, $7,500. Again, this is only the event fee. This is just the cost to get in the door. You can do the Tree of Life at
Animal Kingdom
or Pandora in the world of Avatar.
Well, how much was that?
$7,500. So, and then we get to the big guns.
Pandora is the big guns.
In the Magic Kingdom East, that's $25,000. the Plaza in the east of the Magic Kingdom, and the Magic Kingdom After Hours, which is the castle.
Oh.
$30,000 just as your starting point.
I mean, that sounds, I like, frankly, that does not sound absurd to me.
So this is like fireworks at your wedding, basically. At
the, I think so.
Yeah, it has to
be. I think so. Yeah. And then the price list for the Mickey and Minnie stuff is wild, because as you know, so you book them, you book the characters, and then you pay by the half hour. But those are just for the appearances. Now, if you want Mickey and Minnie to come back to the honeymoon suite after the service, that is $5,000 per half hour, but that's only for them to watch. if you want Minnie to do a threesome with the groom and bride, that is $15K per half hour. And if you want Mickey and Minnie swinging with you, $50K. That's just $50K for the night. At that point, it's just for the whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you
just the girlfriend experience. That's the girlfriend experience.
Do you start getting a discount? Is it like $15K for half an hour or like $20K for the full hour?
Yeah, and it says that Minnie will give you an ear job. She just pulls those ears around and...
Okay.
Come on, Victorino. A little something for the effort there, Skip.
There you go. I'll give you a little pointing over the fence.
Gross. You're all gross.
That is crazy. It strikes me, though, that had they used the money for food, it probably would not have been great food considering how much money they spent for Mickey and Minnie, which doesn't sound like it. You know how much catering is so expensive, depending on, I mean, imagine what it's like over there. So I don't even know if that was, they might be just saying, well, it was either or, but the truth was, it still would have been more had they had food and no Mickey or Minnie. So
look, everybody's got their thing. And for people who are Disney, I have friends, very close friends, who are Disney people. And it's no weirder than being into watches or buying physical media in the year 2022. Like, you know, like everybody's got a kink. It's fine.
No, Disney adults are much weirder.
I disagree.
They're super, like, I'm sorry, this is a place for children.
No, it's the whole thing is so much better without children.
Yeah,
Disney without children is amazing.
You keep saying that, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still a place for children. It's weird.
You basically become a child. You become the child.
You know what's a place for children? School. School is a place for children.
The public pool. that's where the kids go.
That's right.
Wow. Vic, you're doing well, right?
Oh, horrible. Everything on every front. I'm just getting hit left and right. Yeah. It's been a rough, month.
Did your malignant tooth come to life yet?
That hasn't, but I, you know, just before this taping, I had more bleeding where the extraction was. And it's like,
You got a dry socket?
That's not dry socket. Dry socket. How do you know about dry socket?
Wisdom teeth. That's what they warned you after Wednesday. Yeah. Don't suck anything through a straw because you'll get dry sockets.
I haven't had my wisdom teeth out, but I know about the dry sockets.
Yeah, I don't even know what dry sockets are. I just know that I'm terrified of them.
Bad. It's just a big hole in your mouth, and that's where everything gets in there, and then the malignant tooth comes to life, and it turns you into. You start running backwards.
So I have that. The other side also hurting now, which I believe is going to be root canal at some point because it's
cramp.
It's like because I can't eat on one side, I've been eating on the other side, and now that hurts. I'm back on the other side, therefore there's bleeding. The whole thing is a mess. It's awful.
Oh God!
You should just start drinking your meals.
I was like, why? What is this sweet taste? Oh, that's my blood. You know, we're doing a lot of traveling coming up, so trying to get rid of. I'm the only one really trying to get rid of leftovers in our fridge. And forcing everybody into it. We had some like from Rocklands, and I'm like the only one who really likes coleslaw. So I had like a pint of coleslaw, and I plowed through. Let me tell you something about coleslaw. If you're even having if you like coleslaw, one serving on your plate is enough. Trying to go through a pint of that, and it's freshly, it's like that really fresh cabbage. Let me tell you something. You finish a pint, you have entered the danger zone. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Top Gun Maverick continued to fly high at the box office with $90 million, followed by Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It's still there, which took in $9.2 million. And in third place was the Bob's Burgers movie with $4.6 million. Box office thoughts. These are huge numbers.
I have some box office.
Yes,
so,
I'm sure.
Top Gun Maverick did $12.4 million on its second Monday, which is the biggest second Monday, like not including holiday Mondays, not including like Christmas week Mondays, whatever. But like basically, it's the biggest second Monday of all time.
Wow.
The biggest second Monday of all time this movie just had. And then it grossed 11% more on the next Tuesday. It grossed $13.765 million on Tuesday, which is, again, it's an enormous number. I was at Target picking up dog food when John Podhoretz, our friend John Podhoretz, texted me that number. And I was just like, wait, it grossed how much? He was like, I know. And I was like, this movie's going to gross $600 million domestic. It might gross $600 million domestic. Yeah. I mean, there's an outside...
No China necessary.
There is an outside shot that it will do about... There's an outside shot that it could hit $400 million this weekend. That would require basically an average of $10 million on Wednesday and Thursday, which frankly is low looking at these numbers, but an average of $10 million those 2 days, and then a decline of 33%, which would be a worse decline than the first weekend decline, but like it would still be an amazing hold. It would be an amazing hold. That puts them right at $400 million domestic, which it's been a long time since I've seen a movie do what this movie is doing, which is different from what a lot of big movies do, right? You know, you get a movie like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness has a huge opening weekend. It does $160 or $180 million, whatever it did. And then it drops 67% second weekend, right? And it's going to end up grossing about $1 billion worldwide. It'll probably gross $420-430 million domestically. I mean, it is done very, very well. But a movie, I cannot remember the last time I saw a blockbuster style movie perform this way. The last time I think is probably Avatar. Last time is probably Avatar, which did, I think, 78 or something like that in its first weekend, and then did roughly the same number again. But there's an asterisk on that, which is that the first weekend Avatar came out, there was a huge snowstorm on the East Coast. Like, there was like a blizzard that shut the whole East Coast down for a week. So I don't know.
Maverick and Avatar share two things in common. The lesser of the two is that they are both all quadrant movies. They are movies that can be seen by just about anybody. You know, anybody who is 10 years old and up can see it, and everybody wants to see it, right? It appeals to all of them.
Everybody.
But the big thing is that I suspect that no one in America has watched Avatar since it left theaters, because what is the point of watching Avatar on a 42-inch LCD screen TV in your home? That's not what that movie is for. And I suspect there's a lot of that to Maverick as well, because I am not looking forward to watching that even on my nice Ultra HD 65 with my nice audio setup. This is a movie made for the largest possible screen.
Yeah, not
and
your phone.
Movies which are made for that, people into. I went and saw it again because I wanted to see it again on a Dolby Atmos screen, because I knew that after this week I wouldn't be able to. I'd be in theater 3 or theater 4.
It's very sad because they're hitting this wall, the studios, the theaters, because they're committed to, right? They have the agreement. They have to show Jurassic
they have
Park
to show Jurassic,
on
Jurassic World Dominion,
the IMAX or the biggest screens possible. Mm-hmm. So they have no choice but to move Top Gun, which is a shame, because if there was no movie coming out this coming up weekend, it would have made a lot of money yet again, wouldn't it?
So here's Sonny, you wrote about this, and I think you didn't actually go far enough. You wrote that we have an IMAX shortage. Mm-hmm. I think that we are going to wind up in a place where the theatrical experience is inverted from where it is now. Now you go to a multiplex and there might be two screens which are premium format. Right, one IMAX and one Dolby Atmos, or maybe there are two IMAXs and then everything else is normal. I think the reality of the industry is that most multiplexes should be like 80% premium format and 20% normal small screens.
Yeah. I mean, it would make more sense. The problem is refurbing those theaters is insanely expensive.
Well, they're all going to go, all these things, we're going to go through a massive contraction. I mean, the number of screens we have right now can't sustain itself. It's not, I mean, the meme stock boom has, that meme stock bubble has popped. AMC is not, you know, going to be rich forever because of their, their NFTs.
You've already seen some shrinkage. I think there are 5% fewer screens now than there were at the start of the pandemic. And you will probably see more of that. I mean, again, the problem is like a IMAX caliber projector is extremely expensive. It's insanely expensive. The bulbs alone are like $250,000 or something. Wow. I mean, like it's a friend of the show,
Tony.
Tony will probably be, he's probably pulling his hair out right now because I'm saying all the wrong numbers. But the bulbs are insanely expensive. Like a Dolby Atmos sound system, you know, you're looking at like several million dollars of speaker upgrades. So the problem is nobody wants to pay for this sort of stuff. Like Dolby doesn't want to do it. The Atmos type theaters are basically at this point more or less just free advertising for the rest of their stuff. You know, everyone's like, oh, Dolby, that's good sound. You know, IMAX spent all their money in China. There are like four times as many IMAX screens in China as there are in the United States.
They're not even going to see Top Gun, are they?
And they're not going to see Top Gun. Well, not on IMAX.
So they can watch Fast and Furious.
Yes.
They'll all see it Samizdat on the bootlegs. So anyway, my box office thoughts are that the Top Gun Maverick is an enormous hit. It is going to gross more money than anybody thought it would. I seriously doubt anyone at Paramount even was like, this is a billion-dollar movie for us.
Can I tell you how I knew this was going to be a very big weekend again for Top Gun? I went to see it on Saturday. Sunday. It was Sunday. I went with my son to the IMAX in Tysons. Ooh. And we were joined. We were joined by the one and only Paul Crookston.
No kidding.
And his lovely girlfriend, Lauren. Fantastic. He said, oh, I'd like to come on. I said, come on. He hadn't seen it yet. He had very high expectations. So I said, okay. But I don't want to go until like it's like 5 minutes or 10 minutes before because it's 25 minutes of trailers, right? But it's the big theater in Tyson. So I show up. They're waiting outside. I said, oh, did you get here? No, we know we've been here already. I go, oh, what's going on? And they said, there are people sitting in our seat. And I said, oh, here we go.
Oh, boy.
I said, I'm ready for this. This has happened before in places, you know, there's nobody else in the theater, I don't care. I'll sit behind them, whatever. But this time, you know, a lot of people are going to see this on IMAX, especially this weekend. So I said,
it's full.
I got to get myself, you know, in the mode here of like, hey, sorry, these are our seats, okay?
That is not what Vic Mattis would do. Vic Mattis mode is, hey, I think, you know, I would just sit behind you.
If listeners are hearing, that's me slapping my knee.
I really, there must have been some sort of mistake here. Don't worry about me. Maybe they sold both of us the same ticket. I don't know.
I'll sit in the front row. I don't mind my neck.
I'll go somewhere else.
I don't mind my neck craning my neck. So I said, okay, here we go. I said, you know, these young kids or whatever they do, I have my phone out. It shows the seats G2, 3, G1 to 4. I got it all here, ready to go. And I walk in, I said, okay. And I go up and I'm sort of loud because, you know, it's just trailers and stuff. And I said, okay, here we are. Here's our seats. I'm sorry. These are our seats. I'm yelling. Sorry, I didn't mean to yell. But that's how I sounded. And I'm ready to take on these young kids. I look down. It's four old people, two elderly couples. And they look up and the old lady says to me, how do you know they're your seats? And I said, because your side, because they don't tell us where to sit. And it was clear these are old people who haven't been to the theater in like 20 years, right? Where they just get the ticket and you walk in. You know how you just
walk in wherever.
And so then her partner, her husband, I don't know who it was, old man, says, oh, why don't we just sit here then? And I said, well, You know, these are our seats and they're good position. You know, I really, everything else is now scattered and they have no idea where they're sitting. So this goes on. And she says, well, hold on. She says, I got to get my flashlight. I can't see anything. So then this goes on. And finally they said, all right, fine. Okay, we'll get up. And they didn't know where to go. I'm like, and I felt bad, but that told me. And I sat next to a guy who was also very old. You know, maybe they're veterans, but everybody's there. And
those
they
two guys were shot down over Vietnam.
they were in their F-4s.
In their F-4s, man. They spent 3 years in a POW camp. Hey, but listen, you kicked them out of
Hilton.
The seats.
Yes, yes. They were both at the Haddo Hilton. And I said, because, hit the road,
you
know, pal.
Sorry, Pops. If you haven't figured out the app yet, that's on you.
Those were the guys who Tom Skerritt's characters were based on.
Good. Well, I'm glad you kicked Jester out of your and Viper.
Well, I looked, and Viper
of,
and Jester.
And Jester out of their your seats.
You know,
so
I looked
you
around.
Could have the best
there were
seats.
No. I don't know where they had to figure out where their seats were because
Did they buy the tickets at the?
They must have gone right to the theater, and just on the spot,
and just like
four tickets, please.
Or had like a grandkid order them and then email them.
Oh my gosh, no. But that's how I knew. That's how I knew that this was going to be a movie because this crowd, there were a lot of old people. I'll tell you what, and yet again, and Tyson's again at the IMAX, not comfortable lounge seats, obviously, but young people behind us getting up to get snacks during the Val Kilmer Maverick scene. Oh, this is just talking. You go. It's so awful. How could you do that? It's sacrilege.
Did you turn around and scream at them?
Sit out!
I've
already had a rough time. I kick people out, I'll kick you out next.
You sit out! Sit out and watch. Cry! Cry your eyes out!
Okay, so that's why I only have one other Top Gun. We really got it. It's 40 minutes and we got to talk about Wrath of Man. But I will say this. The answer to last week's discussion about what the SU-57 was doing in that amazing scene and having finally seen it on the big screen, it's breathtaking. It's breathtaking. Yeah. The term they use is called supermaneuverability, and it's made possible through thrust vectoring, which I think the F-22 has, but obviously not the F-18. Paul, by the way, says he came in with extremely high expectations, and it blew it out of the water. It was so good.
It's better the second time.
Blew it out of the sky.
It is. It's better the second time. I picked up more things. Yeah. Okay. So this
like about
week,
how it's definitely purgatory.
Yes.
So yes. This week.
I mean, it just is, right?
This week we're talking about. Okay, let's move on. So this week we're talking about The Wrath of Man, starring Josh Hartnett. Oh, they're laughing. I got
He's
some
back.
Laughs. I'm
He's
sorry.
Back.
I thought this was 2002. Starring Jason Statham. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
So I'm going to take a slightly different tack with this big boy review than I usually do. Here's what I expected Wrath of Man to be. I expected Wrath of Man to be a Guy Ritchie, you know, kind of funny comic action movie in the vein of a Snatch or The Gentleman or Rock and Rolla, you know, something like, you know, like super stylized and, quippy, witty, back and forth and all that. And it is not that movie at all. This is Guy Ritchie and Jason Statham basically doing a 70s, I don't know, 70s crime thriller, 70s grindhouse crime thriller type movie. It is a...
It's Guy Ritchie is doing a David Mamet impression while remaking Heat?
Kind of, but it's
there is a Heat element, obviously.
And a Mamet element.
There's a Heat element, there's a Mamet element, there's a S. Craig Zahler element, if you've seen any of his movies. There's all sorts of stuff. But you know from the moment that you start watching that it's going to be different because the opening shot is just this grainy, kind of washed out overview of the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, bleached. Right? Bleached like man, bleached, like a man bleached. Movie. Yeah.
It is, and again, it is super grainy. It is like you can see the little flecks of grain in the sky, and you're like, oh, this is different. And the way that first shot plays out, it's a one-er. It's a single shot. It kind of comes down from the sky and then takes you into the back of an armored car as these two guards are getting back in, and then it just sits there. It basically sits there in the back seat of the of the armored car while a robbery takes place. And you hear that something goes wrong in the robbery. People are getting shot. And then we cut ahead to 3 months later or something like that.
And it's very interestingly shot from that perspective.
It's very interestingly shot, but again, it's very much not shot like a Guy Ritchie movie. Guy Ritchie movies are all about the quick cutting and the montage, and the, we're getting you, we're zipping, boom, 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 back and forth, back and forth. And this is a much more, laid back is the wrong word. It's much more in control. It is, every shot is perfectly framed. Everything, every camera movement is thought through and justified. It's very much like a 70s film in the sense that it feels like a movie that is almost working with limitations. Like it is not a big budget Guy Ritchie movie or even a medium budget Guy Ritchie movie. It's the sort of thing that, you know, Michael Winner would shoot in a Death Wish style type flick. So anyway, I want to lay that out at the beginning because I was expecting something else. I got something different. And oftentimes when that happens, you are disappointed because the thing that you get is not what you were expecting. You wanted something else, something different. And I love this movie so much.
I know what you're taking with the first pick in the Guy Ritchie draft.
I love this movie. I think it is genuinely, it is a weirdly daring picture for him. It's very different from what we would be expecting. It is interestingly structured. It is kind of, you're hopping, it has a Tarantino-esque quality to it where you're kind of hopping back and forth through time.
Very definitive all right. acts.
What's that?
Very definitive
yeah, right,
acts.
With act break chapters, with titles, and you know, you're waiting for the line of dialogue that is the title once you realize that that's kind of what they're doing. Anyway, so the way that's set up, there's a robbery. The second chapter is Jason Statham getting a job at this armored truck company, and it's all about those, and it turns out he's like this super badass. He's just shooting criminals during a takedown. He's putting them down in cold blood. It's crazy, but it's clear he's trying to figure something out. He's not who he said he is. We're trying to figure something out. Who is this guy? What is he doing? And then in the third act, we see that his kid was killed during this robbery. He was there. He saw it happen. He himself is a criminal. He's a master thief and head of a gang and a terrifying sort of person. And another thing that I really like about this movie is what they don't show you. There's a string of shots in this part of the film that is like the aftermath of violence that is like building up to the moment when we actually see the horrifying violence take place. And it works perfectly. Again, it's a very mature, patient piece of filmmaking of the sort that we have not seen from Guy Ritchie before. Frankly, we just haven't.
Yeah.
And then the fourth chapter, we finally meet the robbers. Like, and this is another interesting thing about this movie. Usually in a movie like this, a Heat or a Den of Thieves, you meet the robbers in the first scene. You like the movie is about the robbers, and like the interplay with the cops and robbers is almost secondary to that. And here they are very much, almost afterthoughts, at least until we get to them. And then the final act is the wrath of man. And I have one qualm with this film, and that is that I think that that Jason Statham's character should have died in the shootout. I thought it was kind of cheap to have him get shot a bunch of times and then shows up at the end. And I still think you could have had somebody from his gang execute his vengeance for him. But I feel like in a movie of this sort where everybody else dies, basically everybody in that armored car company dies, all of the criminals die. I feel like to truly thematically drive home the folly of the wrath of man, he has to die as well.
Live by the sword, die by the sword situation.
Exactly.
Well, he did die. What you're seeing is him in purgatory as his dying
I knew
thoughts.
It. I knew
his
it.
Dying thoughts. I his dying it. Thoughts. But it's a minor complaint because I love. I think this does everything else so well and so assuredly. to the extent that, like, really this movie is so weirdly structured it should not work. And maybe it doesn't. JVL, you don't. I'm getting a sense that you did not love this.
What did you think?
So, well, you know, it reminded me a little bit of The Bank Job. Do you remember this? The Jason Statham, just in the tone and again the patience of it. So here's the thing. I liked 95% of the film, but the ending does not work for me. Can we talk about the ending? I mean, it's a year old movie.
Spoiler alert.
First of all, I don't even know how we missed this movie. This is, you know, originally I thought Wrath of Man, was this like a 2004 Guy Ritchie movie early?
I can't remember.
It happened last year. This came out last year and we just missed it.
Was it direct to streaming or was it
no,
in theater?
It was in no, theater. You're kidding me.
It was in theaters, which is probably why we ended up not seeing it. It was probably just like one of those weeks where we couldn't go.
Yeah.
Or something.
So here's what bothers me about it. It is a heist movie and a revenge movie, and the heist portions of it are really meticulously laid out. The movie goes to a great deal of trouble to make sure that the audience always understands where everybody is and why things are happening. Right, we're going to this room so we can do this. We're going to that room so we can do that. This car is going to be in this spot at this moment, and then that cement truck pulls over. Why does that cement truck pull over? So that the backhoe can lift up the rear wheels, right? I mean, it all of it is very rewarding in the way that heist movies need things to be rewarding for you. And then in the last 90 seconds, the lead character, the protagonist, is shot a bunch of times and lying in a pool of blood, and 4 hours later, he somehow has gotten into the apartment of the guy whose name he does not know.
Ahead of time, there are no living
witnesses that he could have gotten the information out of.
He got it from the woman.
All right, I will explain this because I had kind of thought something similar the first time I saw it. In the movie, you see him slip his phone into one of the bags of money, and earlier in the film,
hence the ride of the Valkyries theme.
Yes.
So earlier he has in tracked the film, his phone. To,
earlier in the film, his one of his henchmen says, "I can see where you are. I'm tracking you on your phone." Right. So it does all work. It still feels like a thematic cheat.
And also, like, he's suddenly not hurt, right? I mean, and just everything about
he's
that.
Limping a little.
It just doesn't make sense to me. And
yeah.
if
Agreed.
If we
totally.
Had, you know, again. Give me 90 more seconds showing how this happened and how he sneaks in, fine. Or just have him die and have his bearded, you know, or have
yeah,
him
like
text his bearded guy saying, you know, go ice this guy for me. And the bearded
sort of
guy
like in the Departed.
Who has left, right? You know, the two of them have split and gone different ways. He, as his last act of loyalty to his old boss, goes and caps Wayne Grow. That would be fine.
That's what I would have done, yeah.
Do you like that, Vic? Wayne Grove?
I do. I know. I was waiting. I thought that one of the guys was going to say, "You've just been visited by the Grim Reaper."
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, it's got nice acting work in it by Jeffrey Donovan.
Hockey masks or something.
Yeah. It is such Guy Ritchie's heat in ways which I find lovely, not bad. I don't mean that as an indictment,
sure.
but a compliment.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot to like
about
it.
The acting is great, and an actor in this who I had never really gotten before, and finally it all clicked for me was Scott Eastwood.
Oh,
so it's Clint's kid.
Yes.
is the villain at the end. And he has been in a bunch of stuff, and he's just never. He was in the Independence Day sequel. He is in some of the Fast and Furious movies, and he's never really done anything for me. He's just kind of a stiff. But in this movie, where he is just like glowering at people.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I
convincingly,
get it. He looks like his dad.
Convincingly a bad guy, by the way. But since we're talking about Scott Eastwood, let me ask you, do you remember reading about the dust-up during the filming of Brad Pitt's Fury? And that they were going to come to blows with Scott Eastwood. It was about him spitting, like, chew or whatever. And they almost got in a fight with him and Shia LaBeouf or something. And Brad Pitt was involved, and they had to break it up, and they all hated Scott Eastwood. And then I watched Fury. I don't remember seeing Scott Eastwood at all. So I am. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was the weirdest story.
You're not thinking of. Are you sure you're not thinking just of Shia LaBeouf?
No. 100%.
They all hated him.
No. 100%.
James Caan's kid.
100%. It was Scott Eastwood in Fury, and I'm like, And I go check. And I'm like, I don't remember. Unless they cut out.
We need a movie with Scott Eastwood and Scott
and Scott Conn
together.
When I saw Scott Eastwood Scotty in the credits, in my mind, I was picturing Scott.
Vic, you must have loved this thing.
I liked it. Okay, let's go through here. The plot, I gave it a B+. It wasn't clear to me what Jason Statham did for a living. He's some sort of a crime boss, I guess, you know, but I'd like to know more about that. Okay, who was the woman? We don't know who the woman is. She's giving him dossiers.
His intel. His intel expert. Okay. She does his just papers. An employee.
I was so confused about, again, spoiler alerts. When he's at the food truck, his people call. Right. It's his people who call, say, all we need to know is the truck turning left or right. And he says, right. Yeah. And then and then when the truck gets heisted, I assume it's his people because they wanted to know which direction and they got it. And then they shot the son. No. And then I'm like, now he's got to kill all the people who shot his son. So I was so like, what's happening here? And then as it goes on, it is interesting because he goes through a real trail of vengeance of, I guess, basically undesirables, but not necessarily people who were. I mean,
these are just people he wants information from, right? No, these aren't just people he wants information from.
Brutal. Okay.
You're going to give me a name.
Yeah, crazy.
Well, that's the sequence I was talking about where you see like a lot of the aftermath of violence, right? You see like people with their heads in bags and blood everywhere.
Did you like the FBI stuff where basically working with the FBI and the FBI agent. Andy Garcia has just told him, look, if you kill any of the people on this list, he hands his people, you won't get any trouble from us.
Right. It's making their life easier and they can't do it legitimately. They're not allowed to do this. So duration is a B. It was about 2 hours, I think. Action violence, definitely A, was gritty.
Not A plus?
No, but an A. And sex nudity is an F. This is an R-rated movie. And you see they're about to do it, and then they tease you, and it's the aftermath. Don't give me aftermath tease. I hate aftermath tease. I can't tell you how many movies I've seen where it's like, here we go. Oh, and then all of a sudden, it's the aftermath.
Lynn Renee, the unbelievably attractive gal who is in The Gentleman as Jeremy Strong? No. Yeah, Jeremy Strong's wife in The Gentleman. She couldn't have like slept with him after dropping off his fake passport.
Give me something. Okay.
Come on. Vic is dying over here.
It's terrible. Okay. But I did enjoy it. I started to wonder about the feasibility of the plot because, you know, what are the odds these people are in, you know, the armored truck business and, oh man, I'm getting heisted every day, you know, or I'm getting robbed every week. So I looked it up. And according to the FBI, 25 to 35 armored cars are robbed each year. So if you are to assume...
Is that in the whole country?
The whole country. But let's give them some leeway that Fortico, is that the name of the company? Mm-hmm. Fortico. Imagine that it's like, you know, Brinks and everything else combined into one, like a massive company, okay? And then if you spread it out over time. So what they do, and I noticed this device, obviously, it's like 3 months later, 5 minutes. So it's not... The next day, back on the job. Oh, I got heisted. I got stuck up again. So they knew that wouldn't work. So they had to stretch it out. So I appreciate that. I was reminded of Heat, as I mentioned. The villain operation is interesting. It's these ex-GIs. It's like if you've ever seen the old Clint Eastwood movie, Kelly's Heroes or Three Kings, this is like the dark version of that.
Like Den of Thieves, again.
I've never seen it. Okay.
Gerard Butler's Dirtbag Heat.
Also, is it just because it's Guy Ritchie that there are a lot of Brits playing American roles again? This is like Black Hawk Down, you know?
This is a remake.
Not just Eddie Marsan. Okay.
Remake of a French movie.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet that's interesting. Yeah. Eddie Marsan, his accent comes and goes. And then even the guy who buzzes you into the gate, he was in Chernobyl. And he was great.
He's Scottish.
Yes.
And he's doing an American accent, and there's a scene in the bar where he does a fake British accent as he's an American trying to insult Jason Statham's character by talking like a Brit, which is kind of funny.
Yes. Now, can I ask you about this, too, which is, I'm looking at my script, my notes here. It must have been weird to have been, you're in this movie, and you think to yourself, 20 years ago, I was this big Hollywood heartthrob. box office draw. I would have gotten top billing. I was in Black Hawk Down. And here I am doing this small role as a not hero guy, but the exact opposite, basically a wimp and kind of a moron. And I'm thinking about Josh Hartnett. And then on the other hand, I was thinking, I guess just this, the story of Hollywood, right? It's like Rick Dalton. It's just a weird thing. What do you think? Whenever I see Josh Hartnett, definitely... I'm like, here he is. But and you're expecting more from him? Like,
he's not a good actor. He's not a good actor.
Yeah, I mean, is that why? Like,
the reason he never popped is because he's just not a good actor. He's like the guy from Avatar who was in every movie for 4 years. I don't even remember that guy's name. Who was the lead?
Sam Worthington.
Right. And the, you know, like.
He was in that Terminator one with Christian Bale.
Hollywood can try to make you happen, but at some point you have to have the goods.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you don't have the goods, then you can't make it happen. Right. I mean, audiences figure that out eventually. And Josh Hartnett is not a movie star, which is fine, but he's also not a good actor. And you need to either be a movie star or be a good actor in order to have a career with any longevity in film.
I remember did, after Black Hawk Down, he did a movie. Remember, he did a buddy cop movie with Harrison Ford.
And it did not gosh, you're right. Can you imagine like putting him on screen with Harrison Ford? Even like 80-year-old Harrison Ford? Like it just, you know, like just get blown off the screen. He was,
All right.
Not a value judgment. I'm sure he's a wonderful human being.
Right, of course. God, the cast in this movie is great. Is so good.
Yeah, who plays Bullet, Sonny?
The guy, Holt McCallum.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Was he in Nightmare Alley? Was he the bodyguard?
Yeah, he was the bodyguard in Nightmare Alley. He is in Fight Club briefly. He's one of the Project Mayhem guys. But the biggest role. Oh, he was also in the Gerard Butler Comet movie, Alien Invasion movie. Whichever theory we're going with.
That one, Greenland.
He was Greenland. Thank you. Yeah, he was the guy who was like flying the airplane. Remember, he was in charge of the. But also the role most people will know him from, if they recognize him, is from Mindhunter. He was one of the FBI profile agent guys.
Way back
in Mindhunter. The David Fincher show on Netflix. Mindhunter, not Manhunter.
I was thinking Manhunter. Okay. But hulking figure. Great. Looks like a guy who would be in Stranger Things.
And Jeffrey Donovan's also great in this. I've always thought of him as a TV actor.
What is he?
Because he's Burn Notice. He's the Elvis. He's the sergeant. And he's a really nice presence in this on the big screen. I thought he really worked.
Also great in this is the score.
The score is excellent. The score, very foreboding.
The score is fantastic. Very foreboding. I mean,
one of the things you see if you look through Guy Ritchie's catalog, Santino, is that his scores are always great.
Yeah.
Or soundtracks. So. Okay. Any other thoughts?
No. Well, we're going to do a draft of the Guy Ritchie movies on the bonus show, and I am
on
very
Monday.
Excited about
Stay
this.
Stay tuned.
Guy Ritchie bonus draft.
And the correction shout outs. Okay.
Nah.
That is all the time we're giving to this episode.
Wrap it up.
Okay. Questions, comments, compliments. Tweet us at Sonny Bunch at Victory and Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Victorino.
Yes, JVL.
When we leave this house in Virginia, I find it impossible to believe that we will have been able to eat through everything in the refrigerator. On our way north, should I pack everything that's left over in a cooler and bring it to your house as we go north? Should I drop all of our leftovers at your house? Because if you know I'm throwing them all away, it might drive you insane.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's true.
It is.
So would you like all of the last family leftovers as we get? Because it would be a sin for not finish
them. I'll tell you what's a sin. Putting things in the freezer, say, we don't have to eat it all. Let's just, we just put it in the freezer. You're never going to eat that. I'm telling you now, you're never going to eat it. It's one of the great tragedies. If a giant package arrives, I'm just going to mysteriously take it and say, I went to the store and got a half portion of something. they're discounted because it's like half empty bottles. So that'll be. I'm sure it's fine.